Everyone's a section hiker until you kiss the northern terminus, Magnet.
Maybe I need to just cut ties and, like, you know, let them go a different route, let me go a different route. Maybe I need to do this. I can't just not hike. So I'm gonna quit this job, man. And then I'm like, well, if I'm gonna quit the job, well, shoot, man, like I gotta go all in. Like, this is a golden opportunity. I'm not gonna be able to quit a job every year. So it's like, if I'm quitting, well, that's different. I'm free. Like I gotta take advantage. I'm gonna do the whole thing. So that's how it came.
I'm Doc, and this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod.
Welcome to the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Lace up those boots and sling on the pack for a romp through trails, short and long. With your host and Renaissance man, Doc, it's time to embrace the suck.
Welcome back to another week on the trail. I'm Doc, and this is the John Freakin' Muir Pod. Let's start off with a reminder. If you are enjoying the podcast, take just a minute to help us out. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you're not enjoying the pod, well, just go ahead and keep that to yourself. All right. This week, we are talking to James Parsons, a landscape photographer and section hiker who has taken the plunge. Yes, if you are listening to this episode sometime around its release date, James is out on the Pacific Crest Trail through hiking it in its entirety from Mexico to Canada. Welcome to the John Freakin' Muir Pod, James. Did that intro just give you butterflies, realizing that when this airs, you'll be out there?
Yeah, Doc, it does, man. And, you know, butterflies, and also, like, there's a little bit of sadness. And, of course, like, as we're getting, I'm getting close. Like, I'm 2.5 weeks from starting. And I kind of, just in my section hiking, like, I know how this goes. And it's like, I'm getting this adrenaline rush. And it's like, it's hard to sit still. It's hard to concentrate on anything but what's coming up. But then at the same time, like, I'm looking at, like, my wife, and I look at my dogs, and I'm like really realizing, like, oh my God, I'm not going to see your face for like a very, very long time. So, like, that, all that side of it, which is very real, is coming more real to me too. So it's like, I'm super, super excited, but I'm also like, I feel bad in a way, you know, like.
Yeah. It's a big time commitment. And you mentioned your dogs. We may hear your dogs on the episode here from time to time. What kind of dogs do you have?
I have Australian Shepherds. They're kind of my breed. So
nice.
Yeah.
Those are smart, active dogs.
Yeah. Yeah. Super smart, super active. And it's kind of like, that's kind of why we got into them, because of their activity. But, if you follow my, Instagram page, you'll see my dog, the male dog Lupin. He's done a lot of sections with me and my wife too, but yeah, he's a strong boy, man. I hope to take him on some of this through hike I got coming up too.
Okay. Nice. Now, with the miles that you've logged on the trail, have you picked up a trail name? Cause we only go by trail names here on the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Yeah, actually, my very first section, my wife gave me my trail name, Magnet.
Okay, and Matt, you have to tell us a story behind the trail name. How'd you come by Magnet?
Yeah, so, you know, the rule is you can't give your own name. So this was legit. My wife gave me this name, unprompted, but like, so we did my very first section was Southern Oregon, and she was with me and the two dogs. And anyway, we'll get into some of that. Like, we had way too much gear, and the dogs had, you know, saddlebags, and we were just packing all kinds of stuff. But when the dogs get tired, and they still do this, they'll come in and kind of stick to my back legs. So I get a dog on each leg, which is super annoying, especially when they got saddlebags, because like every step I'm hitting their pack. It pissed me off at the time. Like, but anyway, she gave me that trail name because the way my dogs stick to me.
Nice. Oh. That's a great story. That's great. Yeah. You got to watch out for that, so you don't get pack burn on the back of your calf.
Yeah. Well, now Lupin doesn't carry a pack anymore. And he, like, who's training who? He wore me down. He hates it. So it's like, and I hate kicking it every step. So I carry all the stuff for both of us now. So.
Now we're going to talk about gear in a little bit, but it's always interesting to me how, when you first start out on a through hike or a section hike, you're a first timer out there, you've got all kinds of gear, right? You got a big old pack. You're prepared for anything. And then as you log the miles and you get more experience, you realize what you can live without. So I'm going to be interested to hear about how you kind of pared it down.
Yep. We'll get into that.
Okay. Hey, Magnet, have you listened to the podcast before?
No, I have not. In fact, I didn't even know you until you reached out to me, though. So I will be from now on, though.
Okay. Well, hey, I only ask because I want to make sure that you are aware of a segment towards the end of the episode called the Pro Tip Insight of the Week. And that's where I will turn to you and ask you to share some trail wisdom with our listeners to make their next outdoor experience even better. So don't be surprised when we get there.
Okay.
All right. And of course, you're expected to drop some trail wisdom throughout the episode here. So,
man, I can help. I can help. I'll do my best.
Okay. Very good.
The must bring gear review.
Hey, another section we've got is the must bring gear review, sponsored by the ultralight backpacking gear company Outdoor Vitals. And here's how it works. If you were to let a stranger pack your bag with pretty much generic gear for a multi-day hike, what is the one specific piece of gear you would insist on being packed? And if you've got a particular brand for that specific piece of gear, even better. So, Magnet, what is your must bring piece of gear?
Well, Doc, I am a landscape photographer, as you know, and that's mm-hmm. how I got into the backcountry period was because of photography. So I stay true to my roots, man, and I carry quite a bit of photo gear with me. But the one thing that I would not want to go without on any kind of a long distance pack is my current backpacking cam is a Sony A6500. I don't know if you're into camera gear or whatever, but it's like has a really good sensor, but it's a very, very small and light for what it is. So I carry that. That's for sure my thing I would not go without. Okay. Carry that on a clip and like an extra. So I have like a medium telephoto lens on there at all times. So in case I run across wildlife, I'm like ready to go. And then I carry a wide angle in the pack, extra batteries, and often a tripod. So I'm ultra light in all my other gear so that I can carry my camera gear, you know? So that's my Sony is like a must have piece of gear for me.
You are not the first photographer to talk about going ultra light so you can carry additional camera equipment.
Yeah. Beer too. But photo gear I have to cut elsewhere. Cause they don't make ultra light camera gear. Like you just don't, not yet anyway. So
you could be a millionaire if you invent that, Magnet.
Yeah, if we get enough of us out there and become like a marketing demographic, then maybe we can like start making demands. But right now, you just gotta like, yeah, use what's available. But it is far from ultralight. In fact, I mean, I don't mean to get on a tangent, but it's like, I think with photographers, there's actually like value in weight. Like we sort of impressed by, oh, this must be some good glass. It's super heavy, which is just what you don't want. So it's like, I think they probably add weight to these things just to make them feel more hefty, which is just what, you know, backpackers don't want. But
yeah, camera manufacturers are listening to this and they're saying, okay, we're gonna line these cameras with lead and mark them up in price.
Incredible glass. This is like heirloom right here. Yeah.
Now I'm interested, how many pictures do you take on a usual day of hiking? I mean, are you pulling that camera off the clip several times an hour, or do you have set times during the day that you like to shoot?
Man, my Lightroom software that I use, it organizes all my photos by date. So like on a long hike, you know, I'm out there every single day. And so there's some days I don't shoot anything. So just going back, some days I'll shoot like two photos of something. And then when I hit something like, you know, the Nice Edge in Washington, I got from just that one day I went through there, I got 180 photos or something from like the whatever 4 hours I was walking through there. So it varies like tremendously. It's all about what I'm seeing. And on a through hike, I got to admit, like most days there's nothing that great. And I got a cell phone. So it's like, if it's so-so, I'll just use the cell phone. I won't take the Sony off the clip for it. So
yeah,
so it varies like extremely widely. Like,
yeah, it depends on your inspiration. And you asked me about my camera experience. Yeah, it's my iPhone. I'll pull out the iPhone and take some shots here or there. So
yeah, man, and I still do that too. It's like that's like my main kind of thing. If it's something kind of cool, it's like. But if I'm thinking at all, like, oh, I'm gonna submit this to the Pacific Crest Trail Association photo contest, or like, you know, this is something really epic, or I want to maybe make a print or sell prints of this. I go to the Sony. So.
Okay. Now on that first hike where you picked up your trail name, how much was your, how much was your pack weight?
I didn't weigh it, but like tremendous, absolutely tremendous. Like probably like 40 pounds is a pretty good guess.
Okay.
I mean, just my camera gear then was not even ultra light. And then I had, you know, all my gear was like, I just bought stuff. I had no idea. My tent, I weighed later. Like once I started like actually looking into this stuff, my tent was 7 pounds.
Oh, wow.
That gives you an idea. It was, yeah, like a, it was a, like a North Face, like fairly low cost 3-person tent for me, my wife and the dogs. Right. 7 pounds, man, just the one tent. So it's like, yeah, you can do the math. It's like, it was crazy, like crazy heavy.
And with you heading out on the PCT in 2.5 weeks, what is your base weight, excluding your camera equipment? What's your base weight heading out next?
So like 10.25 pounds. And I did just weigh that. So it's getting, every year it gets a little better, man. Like, I made some big changes and got it way down. But like now I'm just like getting like ounces better every year. So yeah, about 10, but then I throw the camera gear and then I'm up at like 16 or something. But still, yeah.
It's the Hiking Pole.
Hey, we are going to talk about gear here. And to help us talk about gear, we're going to do something called the Hiking Pole. And it's P-O-L-L, like a survey, not P-O-L-E, like the hiking pole. All right?
All right.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you 7 questions. Help us talk about gear. It's also going to help me come up with a score for you on the crazy scale.
All right.
With 1 being completely bonkers and 100 being totally sane. But there's an automatic 20-point deduction for a long trail through hiker. So the best you can score at this time is 80. Because that's okay, right. We already know you're a little bit crazy to embark on that. So, all right, here we go. Trekking poles or no trekking poles?
Trekking poles.
Okay. You have a specific brand that you prefer?
Well, the brand I've been using, and it's not to say I haven't had problems with them. I'm not saying like they're perfect. There's a CNOC. I guess they only make that one carbon pole with the cork handles. I bought them at the beginning of last year, and they have had some issues, but I'm sticking with them, man. Like, I don't know. It's one of those things. It's like, I don't know if you ever play guitar. It's like, once you get the feel for that thing in your hand and the weight and the rhythm, like I can't leave them, man. But yeah, I've had two pieces I've had to glue back together in the first year. So they're not perfect, but that's my brand. So
you sound loyal. Very good.
Yeah. With some gear I am.
All right. Next one, boots or trail runners?
Trail runners. Man, that's, in fact, I credit that with like switching to trail runners in the first place is one of the big things that like thru hikers taught me when I was doing sections, my first sections. And man, I tell you, that made a big difference switching to trail runners. Like, I'm for sure sold on it. That being said, this year on the thru hike, like, I'm going to have boots waiting for me at Kennedy Meadows. They're super light Merrells. Like, they're not super heavy boots, but I think I've been convinced that I'm going to try to go through like the snow with boots and gaiters. But anyway, yeah. Trail runners for like 99% of what I do. So
yeah, trail runners, they're life changing. I mean, if you started out in boots on long hikes, you're always having to take care of your feet. And if the feet aren't happy, you're not happy. And I made the switch to trail runners, and it was just a game changer for me.
Yeah, man. And I switched that along with a bunch of other stuff. So I can't say like exactly what it did for me. But at the time, like after we did our first sections and I met some like thru hikers who like taught me a ton of stuff, I got my pack weight way down, like half what it was. And I switched to trail runners, and immediately my mileage went way up. So they made a big difference for me, man. Like, again, I get other things too, but it seemed to be a big factor in like how many miles you could do, less fatigue for sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Tent, tarp, hammock, or cowboy camping?
Tent. With an occasional cowboy camp, but I'm definitely tent. And a lot of that's to do with my dogs. And they're not going in a hammock. That would be a nightmare. And I got to keep them contained, because I just worry, like, at night, if they had free reign, like if I had a tarp, they would chase stuff, man. They would be off any sound and any like thing. So I can't be having that. So that's kind of mostly why I'm tent.
Okay. Makes sense. Do you not mind the bugs?
I don't like the bugs. I live in the Mecca of it too. I live in Oregon, but, yeah, I'm not a fan of the bugs. But we get in late season, we don't, you know, after like late August, man, we have some of like the best weather and the most bug free conditions. It's really awesome. But, yeah, that's, I guess I didn't really mention that, but like, that's another reason to have like at least a screen around you.
Right.
I can't stand that, man. I can't stand the bugs.
Now, where in Oregon are you? We're off the hiking pole here for a second, but where are you in Oregon?
Yeah, I live in Bend. I live in a trail town. With a lot of other like former PCT hikers too, because I think that we've had so many people like that discover Bend from the trail and move here. But anyway, I didn't discover it because of the trail. I lived in Bend, which is why I discovered the trail. But
okay, all right. Yeah. I've heard great things about Bend.
Yeah, apparently other people have too, man. Everybody seems like they're moving here as fast as the highway can accommodate cars right now.
Right, right. Okay, back to the poll here. Sleeping bag or quilt?
So I have been a mummy bag for as long as I've been backpacking, and I'm just trying a quilt this coming hike.
Okay.
So I got a light equipment quilt. Actually, I got two, if I'm being honest. I got a 20 degree, and then I just for the Sierra, I'm like, I don't want to buy like a whole nother quilt, like a super expensive one. So I got like a synthetic 40 degrees to throw on top. So I'm going to try it, man. I'm going to see how, I mean, the only reason I'm switching is now we're talking like I've already got my kit pretty ultra light, but now we're talking like we're counting ounces. So it's like, okay, I save about a pound. So that's something, you know, not just basically not having the hood and not having the full length zipper. I guess that's all the difference is, but
like, yep, that's right. I'm a tarp guy too. I like tarps. So quilts. I'm a quilt guy. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, I hope it goes with it, man. The only thing is like, I love having the hood on the mummy. Well, for one, it holds my pillow in place. If I'm being honest, like just that one feature alone is the coolest thing. But so I took an extra quilt strap and kind of made a strap for my pillow, which sort of works, not perfect, but like it definitely helps. So we'll see. And then I got my puffy hoodie, and then I'll probably use like a balaclava or something when it's really cold on my head too. So
yeah. Hey, Magnet, pro tip for you. Some pillows come with a strap.
Yeah. Okay. I have one. Some of the high end ones don't though. Okay. I got stuck in the, there's a Nemo one and I got it because like, I'm a big guy and all my other pillows, I'm like, my next kink is not, it's not enough. Well, I found this Nemo that's like 5.5 inches thick. So it's kind of a tank, but it doesn't have a strap, man. So like, I want the thickness of that thing, but it doesn't have a strap. So
you're a very particular guy. You got very specific needs and wants there. Very good.
Yeah, man. If I can make improvements, I'm going to do it. You know, if I can sleep better, that's absolutely,
you know, did you ever try using a stuff sack with some clothes in there as a pillow?
Oh, absolutely. Use my food bag. And cause I've had pillows fail on me and stuff too, or just lost them. So I've used everything under the sun.
It's terrible. It's a terrible option. You gotta have a pillow.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
Yep.
And as a big guy, most pillows, you know, the three inch thick or whatever, it's just not cutting it, man. I'm a side sleeper. So you're just,
yeah,
just kinked all night. So anyway, I'm getting close to getting my neck level with this thing. So
okay, now as a side sleeper, you're going to enjoy the quilt because I found as a side sleeper that sleeping bags weren't conducive to side sleeping.
All right, I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, I'm just messing around with it in my living room. There's certainly like quite a bit of freedom there. Like, yeah, that's going to be cool.
Yep. All right. Hey, this next question, Magnet, very important on the crazy scale. So all right, there we go. Stove. Cold soak or stoveless?
Stove, absolutely, man.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. I mean, like I talked about, I'm like pretty ultra light, man, but like there's certain things I won't do without. Like I'm a big guy. I can carry some weight. I started backpacking carrying massive amounts of gear. So it's like, dude, I'm not afraid of some weight. And just like the comforts of being able to like make oatmeal, and I'm a coffee drinker big time. So like just stuff like that, man. And the versatility of being able to like, you know, make rice and different things that you find on the trail.
You can make all that with cold soak too. It's just cold.
It's like a straight Knorr dish. How long would that take though? Like, cause it already takes like 10 minutes to do like a Knorr pack, you know, like how long would it take to cold soak that?
So the cold soak people, I mean, they are fanatical. They swear by cold soak and this is the only way to go. When you're about 45 minutes out from your final stop of the night, yeah, stop for a second. You throw your stuff in your cold soak bottle. You fill it up with water, and then you put it back in your pack, and you keep going. You don't have to worry about it. When you get to camp, it's good to go. But my only problem is it's cold. You know, and there are days where you need a hot meal.
Yeah, man, a hot meal, like, it makes a difference. It warms you up when it's cold, for sure. When it's super hot, you probably don't want to have that. But like, yeah, when it's cold, it makes a pretty big difference on like your core temp and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. They make stoves so damn light now, and the titanium pots. Like, I don't see. Man, I'm a 225 pound guy, 6'3". Like, if I'm going to like say, oh, I can't enjoy a hot meal because of whatever the 10 ounces or something. Come on now. No, I'm stove.
All right. Well, Magnet, you avoided that landmine. That was an automatic 15-point deduction if you pick cold soak. So that's
really
that's all good right. news I'm there. Rushing. Yeah.
I'm going to get the highest score.
All right. Hey, is life better above or below the tree line?
Generally above, man. Yeah. I'm kind of discovering that sort of more and more is our, like you can, the thing I like in our local area about above tree line, which a lot of it is like in the Three Sisters and stuff, is you can get off trail a lot easier above tree line. You can just roam. And as our crowds increase, getting off trail and finding your own like little, you know, little glacial lakes and stuff like in the high country is like, it's pretty key for like in, for experiencing the wilderness without just hordes of people and noise and stuff like that. So, and as a photographer, yeah, the views can be better. I mean, you're stuck in the trees, man. It's a whole different kind of photography. It's not as dramatic unless you get like that moody, misty, like foggy forest. I love that kind of stuff. But like, yeah, man, above tree line for sure.
Yes. Totally agree. All right. Last question in the hiking poll. Yeah. Long trails, should they be hiked northbound, southbound, or flip-flop?
Yeah, man, that's really interesting. That was one of the things I was hoping we'd get into more. But like in this segment, I'm doing this northbound, and I kind of have been. Like, there's pros, but I've thought about flip-flopping, and some, you know, I may hike the PCT more than once. We'll see. And like, I would definitely try to probably do a southbound at some point, just because like to see it differently. You know, experience it differently. But two things I like about northbound, like for me and my place in life, you can take more time, which is really cool. So you got a longer window to do it. And then I really like the social aspect of it. So there's more people out there. I don't know what it is. Like normally when I backpack, I try to avoid people, but because I think it's because you're out there so long that I like that there's people out there. Like I like that you can like form groups and make friends and, you know, so I don't know. That's my thing, but I'm not saying like it's the right way. I'm not going to get like that. No, I don't like to be like that. I was going to talk to you about like the hike your own hike thing. Like,
right.
You know, about people get preachy with this stuff. And I don't agree with that. But like for me in my life where I'm at now, north.
Yeah. In fact, your Instagram handle is magnet.northbound.
That's right.
Yeah. Yep. I figured I knew the answer to that question before I asked you.
Well, yeah, no, you got that. But yeah, yeah. I'm not preachy about it. Like, and maybe I'll change my handle someday. Hey, well, you know, we'll see. It's fluid.
Now, yeah. If you're antisocial or if you're starting later in the year, maybe you would decide on a southbound hike.
Yeah. Well, there's less permits issued for the southbound hike.
That's true.
Quite a bit less. And then the last 2 years, all the southbounders, been kicked off trail in Northern Cal because they've closed the national forests in Northern Cal, I think specifically for 2 years in a row, right in the peak of the fire season.
Right.
So they've all like, at least legally, I don't know if any of them kept going illegally, but they had to all abort. And this is super sad after all that, you know? So like some people are arguing is a southbound through hike even like possible anymore. So I'll be keeping an eye on that, you know?
Mm-hmm. All right. Hey, as you said, you crushed this. I mean, that was an excellent job on the hiking poll. Just a 2-point deduction for each of the times that you had to glue your trekking poles together and stick with those. So
all right, I'll pass it on to CNOC then.
Yeah, you are 78. So quite sane, other than the fact that you are attempting a 2,600 mile through hike.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, before we get too far down the trail, let's back up a little bit. I'd love to hear about your background, where you grew up, what kinds of sports and hobbies you played in as a kid. And did your family kind of get you exposed to the outdoor adventure thing? Did you guys do car camping or tent camping or, you know, just so let's just hear your origin story, where you came from.
Yeah, man. So I did not grow up really backpacking. We did some car camping and stuff. What I'm into now has absolutely nothing to do with my upbringing. You know, my whole life I've always been like jumping from hobby to hobby, but I wasn't super active. I don't even really like team sports that much, to be honest with you. I mean, look what I do now. I like to go through, like, it's like the most not team isolated, you're on your own thing you could possibly do, right? I've never really been into that whole thing. I have enough trouble coordinating myself. And you get a whole bunch of other people together, it's like herding cats, man. It frustrates me. I've always been kind of a loner. So yeah, not really sports and not even super athletic, even though I'm like a big guy. I've always been into nerdy stuff. That's my thing. I'll give you the history. I guess I'm actually from California, so I hate to admit that, but we moved to Portland in 2004, that's sort of how I kind of started to discover the outdoors. But we were more like, we got into the craft beer scene. Like I homebrew now. We love beer, but we started to get into hiking and because of our dogs mainly.
Uh-huh.
So we were just like car camping, day hiking and beer drinking. So we go for the weekends, camp, do a day hike, go drink beer. That was like our cycle. That was our thing.
Trifecta right there.
Yeah. It's still my thing, to be honest with you. But like that, But overnights and stuff, like I just hadn't even thought that far down the road, right? We moved from Portland to Bend almost a decade ago. This summer would be a decade. And my, how time flies. But being in Bend, so we bought a bigger house, and I was like, oh, I got all these blank walls. And I started like looking around for like art things to put on the walls, and it was super expensive. And I'm like, dude, I could do this. The price of DSLRs has come down. I can get a camera and I'll print at Costco and buy frames at Michael's and I'll decorate this place. It'll be cool because I want to go see all these places anyway. So, mm-hmm. So that's what got me into photography and stuff, was really trying to decorate my house. And then, as more I got into photography, I realized that, you got to be out in these places in the good light. You can't just like day hike. You know, if you really want the good shots, you have to go at, sunrise, sunset. So I'm like, all right, I gotta like spend the night on this place. I gotta be there at the sunrise. All right, so like get on Amazon, backpacking stuff, and got like a kit together and
found your 7-pound tent.
I really didn't like that part of it, to be honest with you. Like I didn't like the hiking out to the place and really didn't even like sleeping out there too much, you know. I was just into photography. But over time, it just kind of like it took some years, but it's like I was like, I'm really starting to like that side of it, you know, not just the photography. Like I'm kind of getting into I actually like walking out here now. I used to just like think that I just thought I had to do, but like actually getting into that part of it. So, I don't know if this could segue into like how I found the PCT, or we'll just.
It kind of grew on you. You did your research, yeah. you got your backpack equipment, your 7-pound tent. And
yeah, my stuff was heavy.
The more you did it, the better it became. And lo and behold, now you're two and a half weeks away from doing 2,600 miles. And so let's talk about the PCT, in that I'm always interested to find out when somebody first learned that a trail from Mexico to Canada that you could walk the whole thing actually exists. I mean, do you remember that moment when you discovered that there was a trail like that?
Yeah. So as I got into photography more and more, like I started Extreme Oregon, that page business. It's actually a business. I sell prints and stuff. So I'm like, all right, so this is cool. I'm going to like turn this into a side hustle thing that I do. And I'm going to just focus on Oregon because I got a full-time job. I can't really like travel all over the country. So I'm just going to like keep it local. And I'm just going to cover Oregon and do, travel around, explore, like find everything cool just in the state of Oregon. Cause that's like suits me really well, you know? And it was up in the Mount Jefferson wilderness, and I saw these guys, and it was like, I came in on a side trail like I usually would do at the time. And I saw them, I'm like, you guys going up to Mount Jefferson? And they said, no, we're going to Canada. And I was like, oh yeah. I kind of heard about that trail. It's like, it just to see someone like, you're doing what now? Like, it just kind of blows you away. That was my first moment of realizing like, oh yeah. And it comes right through here. Okay. That people actually did that.
Yeah.
I think that crazy. Was like 2013 or 14.
Mm-hmm. And did you ever think at that moment that, back in 2013 or 14, that, nine years later, you'd be doing that yourself?
No way. No, why would I do that? Yeah. You don't need to do that. And you don't need to do that. Like I could see all the, this was my mentality at the time. I could see all the cool places along that stretch with way less effort. Like I come in on side trails and just like, do a weekend and I could see all the same stuff. Why would I walk the entire thing, all the dead space where there's nothing cool in between?
Yeah.
That's what I would have said then.
You can drive a car on the highway next to some pretty land for a lot of California and Oregon and Washington and see it out the window.
You can see it out the window. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you mentioned earlier that you grew up in California. You live in California, born in California?
Born in Los Angeles. Yeah.
Los Angeles. Where did you live until you moved to Portland?
Kind of all over. But it was all mostly Southern California. My parents are like still north of Santa Barbara. They're still there.
Okay.
So kind of all over, but we were in San Diego for the last little stint. That's where I got married. And then we moved to Portland, and I was born there, but I was never fit in. I never really liked it. It's like, I always had this like little issue with it. But as soon as I was like old enough to like, I'm starting my own life and I want to be my own person. I want to do my own thing. I just realized like almost anywhere else was going to be like a huge improvement for me, you know?
Right.
So.
All right. So at the Oregon you went. Yeah. Now does Mrs. Magnet also have a fancy for long trails?
No. In fact, we started, we were going to section hike Oregon together, and that didn't continue very long. She runs marathons and she's super athletic, but just not like, yeah, man, we talk about, you know, the crazy scale or whatever. Like, I think you do have to be a little bit kind of special, to do that and then just want to do more of it. Like constantly want to do more of it. After you experience that, I don't blame her. I mean, she's smart.
Now, with her marathon running, do you ever join her in running marathons?
I ran a half.
Okay. Like, there you go.
Yeah, man. And it was really hard. I didn't think it was, I don't know. I didn't like it that much.
All right. Now we know you're a landscape photographer. Is that what you do primarily for a living, or do you have some other job that pays the bills?
Yeah, I got another job that pays the bills. So, I don't know if you want to hear about that. It's like, I work in healthcare. So I do, we're clinicians. We see patients, but we make prosthetic limbs and like orthopedic braces. So we kind of build stuff for the most part. We take molds of patients and we like come up with concepts and we build and we fit and we make stuff work like that. So,
Yeah, I've talked to a couple of long trail hikers who have lost a lower leg and have done it on a prosthetic. You ever make anything like that for a through hiker?
Yeah, not a through hiker, man. I follow a couple amputee like long distance hikers on this. I've never made anything for like a through hiker, but hikers for sure. Yeah. All the time, actually. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get down to some stories of adventure from your section hikes. And I want to hear all about your expectations and your prep for the big deal, the through hike of the PCT. So stay tuned for that. We'll be right back.
From the backcountry to the backyard, we believe everyone deserves the highest level of protection. Since 1984, Sawyer Products offers the best, most technologically advanced solutions for protection against sun, bugs, and water, using time-released liposome technology, topical insect repellents, and new standards in water filtration. And with every Sawyer product you buy, you are helping to provide clean water through 140 charities in 80 countries with their long-lasting water filters. Every Sawyer product you buy is an investment in our common humanity. Choose Sawyer and keep the adventure going, knowing that their products have been tested and chosen by those who count on serious protection on the trail all day long. The John Freakin' Muir Pod is sponsored by Outdoor Vitals, the ultralight backpacking gear company whose mission is to improve the mental, physical, and emotional health of mankind by facilitating impactful outdoor experiences. Outdoor Vitals creates innovative technical products with confidence-inspiring education that empower outdoor ultralight adventurers. Their focus on performance enables you to live ultralight with gear you can actually be confident with. Whether you're looking for an ultralight sleep system, shelter, or pack, or if you're looking for top-quality apparel for the trail, you can find it at Outdoor Vitals. Do yourself a favor. Live ultra light.
Hi, everybody. This is Doc with some bonus footage for the Magnet episode. It turns out that the timing of the release of Magnet's episode just so happens to coincide with him being on mile 444 of the PCT, which puts him about 25 minutes away from me. He reached out to me to let me know, and I joined him and his trail family for dinner at a Mexican restaurant in Acton, California. While I was there, I met the members of his tramley, Spanx, Big Marmot, Corolla, and Boomerang. And Big Marmot told a Trail Magic story that I just had to include in the episode. So before we begin segment two with Magnet, please listen to this little ditty from Big Marmot.
My name is Aleksandar Damjanović. I'm from Belgrade, Serbia. Here I'm known as Big Marmot. And this is my Trail Magic story. Okay, so that was like 10 days ago or something like that. Magnet and I were in a hurry to get to lake. What was the name of that
Silverwood
lake?
Silverwood Lake.
Silverwood Lake.
To get pizza.
Yeah, and we get there like hour and a half before other people, and but the pizza place didn't had a driver to send pizza to delivery pizza. So we were there and desperate, and we tried to beg some people around, and we didn't. And we were so hungry. So I took like full hand of Skittles, which I had in my pocket, backpack pocket, and I put it in my mouth, and I started to chew it like really, and then like crown of four teeth. From my mouth just fell out together with those Skittles, and I was like without half of my teeth almost. And then okay, so what we do? I just search for a dentist nearby, and we knew that we will stop in Brightwood. So I check in Brightwood, and there was only one dentist, Dr. Sung something. So the name didn't really give any confidence, but still I was like believing in the in the trail and everything. So after a few days we came there, and I made the appointment, and after a few days we came there, and I went there, and I was a little bit like worried. I get all my money, and it was like $160. So when I get there, I ask lady, I already explained them on the phone what is going on, and then I ask lady how much that will be just to glue back those four teeth. She said 137, but she is not sure if doctor will need also Rengen. And I ask how much is Rengen, she said 37. So altogether 170, I have 160. So I said, okay, I will go to just borrow more money from my friends. And she said, don't bother with that, just relax. And then I sit on the chair, Dr. Sung came, young Korean guy. And he was looking my teeth, and he said, one of those also have some caries, so we need to fix that. And I count like, oh my god, that would be like maybe 100 more or something like that. But in the end, they fix everything. And when I came out, I was thinking to the reception, I was thinking, okay, probably more than 200. I'm going to ask for Boomerang, in that time still Simon, to borrow me some money. And then they said, that's okay, everything is fine, happy trails. And I was like stoned there, and like my eyes become just full of tears. So I just said like thank you, and I ran out to cry. But definitely me and my family are coming back to San Diego in August, and hopefully. And I will then drive from LA to Chicago, like RV van, and I will stop there and bring some, what we said, some good whiskey or wine or something like that. So that was really a moment, yeah, which I will definitely never remember, never forget.
That's great.
And welcome back. We are talking to Magnet. And, you know, you mentioned earlier about landscape photography and Extreme Oregon. And I've taken a look at that Instagram account, and it's phenomenal. I mean, the photos you got on there are just incredible. Tell us a little bit about Extreme Oregon and how long it's taken you to put that together and build it into the site it is now.
Yeah, man. It's been about a decade that I've been doing that. And my early stuff, in my opinion, was pretty horrifically bad. Like, when I look back, I'm like, oh, I guess that's everyone that gets into photography. But like, but at the time there wasn't that many people doing it. And so it was like, I'll stick with it. Like I was telling you, I'm kind of a little bit of a loner. So I'm like doing this nerdy activity kind of out by myself with not a lot of people or other people are doing it. That's like my speed. So I kept at it, you know, kept getting better. And it's like, but I think over time, it's like, as more and more other people started doing it, you're like, all right, well, I like to do my own thing. And now so many people are doing something similar. So I was like, I gotta carve my own way of doing it, or my own path that's unique in some way. I can't just do like the canned stuff that, you know, put the little person standing in the place and with the revolving door all day that people are doing. I can't do that. I gotta do it my way. So it's like, it's sort of morphed into like, I mean, my specialty is like, I find unique stuff out there. And it's really fun for me, because it's like, I can research on Google Earth and just kind of like, it's like a little bit like geocaching, but for photography, I can find these places that, hey, I've never seen anyone like photograph from here. Find it virtually. I could, you know, use what I know for backpacking. I figure out how to get myself there, the good light, the good seasons and stuff. So I get to nerd out and I get to backpack and find stuff that, you know, hey, maybe someone's photographed it, but I've never seen it. No one else has ever seen it. And that's like the stuff that I love to do.
Can you give us an example of something unusual or something you think that nobody else has shot it quite like that before?
Yeah, probably about half my collection is, I think, unique stuff that I've never seen done before. But like, just locally, because of where I live, there's a spot that I've told a couple people about, but I've still never seen anyone else photograph it. It's like, I found it on Google Earth, and it's like a spot where our local mountains from Broken Top to, I guess, North Sister line up just super perfectly with the Deschutes River and the really dramatic part of the canyon. And it's public land where you're standing, so it's like totally legal to go there. You're not trespassing or anything. So I got a good shot like during, we had like a pretty green spring, I don't know, 2019 or 18 or something. Mm-hmm. Good shot where the canyon is like as green as it gets anyway. It's deserty, but with the mountains and the morning light, they were all snow-capped. And that's an example of like stuff I just love to do, you know, show people something different they maybe haven't seen. And it's like, the other thing I've done with the page is like, there's so much like narcissism out there in social media. People that are, look at me. And, you know, just doing it all for, appearing to do it like mostly for themselves and for their own satisfaction, likes and admiration. Right. Are making money off this stuff, and they're making money basically exploiting public land, whether they're writing guidebooks or, you know, doing stuff to that effect or just taking photos to get likes and stuff, but they're inadvertently driving traffic and usage to these places that they show. And it's like almost nobody's doing anything to help these places or do anything to give back. So another thing that I decided to start doing, just so I, you know, a reason for me to keep posting is like, I'm gonna do that different too. Like I'm gonna, so with every post I give back at least $5 to some nonprofit with every post I make on that page. And so that's something else that I do just so I'm not like those other people. If I complain about them and say they're doing it wrong, well, I gotta be different, right? I gotta put my money where my mouth is and say, you know, there's a connection between these places and all the volunteers and all the like the nonprofits that fund the trails, the parking, the amenities and the stuff that we use. And also, you know, these groups that fight to get us new wilderness areas like designated, right? Mm-hmm. Who's taking care of them? Who's helping them that's trying to help us? And I'm trying to make this connection in people's minds, like, you know, the stuff isn't free and if you use it, you should also help it, right?
Yep. Great message.
So that's what I do.
Fantastic. Fantastic. All right. Now, we referenced section hiking, and I'm not sure we've ever had a section hiker.
A lowly section hiker?
I didn't say lowly. So there are many, we talked about there's many branches on the outdoor adventure tree. You know, there's thru hiking, there's section hiking, there's day hiking, there's big wall climbing, there's mountaineering, all kinds of fun stuff to talk about. But in terms of section hiking, what you're doing, and you tell me if I'm getting this wrong or right, what you're doing is you're taking a big trail like the Pacific Crest Trail, and you're hiking a section of it at a time until the ultimate goal is to have hike every mile of the Pacific Crest Trail. You're just not doing it all in one fell swoop.
Right. And I think I'll speak for myself. You know, half of that was because I didn't think I would enjoy doing a full through hike at the time. And half of that was because my job, like I could not be away for 5 to 6 months. So it was a little bit of both, like 50-50 both. You know, I definitely a year or two ago was like, I don't know if being gone that long is really necessary and being on trail that long is really like going to be awesome. And then it kind of worked out that like, well, it was probably for the best. Cause I like can't, there's no way I could anyway. So like, well, the best I could do is sections, you know? So yeah. That was my goal. And it's like, yeah, definitely better to do it. Do it my way, do it in a way that works for me than to not go. Cause you see so many people, like older people that are like, oh, I always wanted to do that. And so good that you're doing it. And I just don't want to be like one of those people. It's like, I should have, if I had only, like, I'm going, man, I'm going. And any way that I can do it, I'm doing it. I don't care if it's like, if I had to day hike the whole thing, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So.
No, that would be interesting to day hike the PCT in its entirety. Yeah.
Well, and the logistics, like for section hiking, you know, it takes a ton more time. You know, through hikers think, and the way there's this perception that like section hiking is like, oh, you're not committed enough. But really, like, you're way more committed. It takes so much more time and planning. And a lot of that's the car shuttles, but it's like, it's day hiking it would be freaking awesome. But yeah, you'd have to be retired and stuff. I'm like, but yeah, you could just drive, walk out, walk back, or get a shuttle back and just keep leapfrogging it all the way up. Isn't it cool?
So how many miles could you do in a day? I mean, if you're a decent day hiker, if you're not, I mean, through hikers and they're doing, you know, 25, 30, 35 miles a day. But if you're just a day hiker, you're going to take it at your own speed and you're committed to doing the whole thing. What are you doing? 10 miles, 15 miles, probably for a day hiker.
Yeah. If you don't have a car shuttle though, you're going to have to double that mileage because you got to go out and back.
That's right.
Which I faced that before in my section hikes. Like no one's going to pick me up, man. I haven't actually done it yet. But I was prepared to do 150 miles out, 150 back. That was the only way I was going to be able to do Southern Washington. Till someone that follows me on Instagram said, hey, I'll come pick you up. Like someone I never met, which is the coolest thing.
Trail Angel.
Thing is like,
yeah,
we haven't gotten into that yet. But it's like, I was prepared to do that. And that's some of the stuff I say about section hiking. That's like people think, oh, you're just a section hiker. It's like, dude, you figuring out how to do this and it all costs no matter what you have to do it is like, it's a lot more time and commitment involved in doing that than just you're already out there and you're through hiking. You don't have a car. You don't have a shuttle. You just keep going.
Right.
In a way, it's like it's more work.
Right. Now, I mean, you talked about it earlier. 99% of us don't have 4 or 5 months we could take off from work and do a through hike. And so,
yep.
You know, section hiking then is a viable option for us. I've always told my wife that, you know, PCT, it's only 2,600 miles. If I did 100 miles every summer on my week off, you know, I can get this done in 26 years. No problem.
Yeah. Crazy when you put it like that. Oh, man. Yeah.
And so let's talk about the logistics. How is section hiking more complicated than through hiking?
Getting yourself to the trail. I live next to the trail. So like Oregon wasn't that hard for me to do, but it's still really hard. Even Oregon was hard. And it's the car shuttle thing, man. It's like, And then leaving your car at those remote trailheads. So I've had my car's been vandalized. Somebody stole my gas one time. They stole about 5 gallons of my gas, broke the cap, stole my cap, took about 5 gallons of gas, but I don't lock my car, so they didn't break my window. But like just having to leave your car and figure out someone to come get you at the right time and take you back to your car and then drive home, and just do it over and over and over. And some sections are a lot harder to do than other sections. You start getting up into Washington and it gets harder, man. Like there isn't really like bus services or any way you could like really figure it out.
There's less access.
Trail Angels, if you're lucky, mm-hmm. That's a big ass to ask a stranger mm-hmm. to come get you at a specific time and drive you like 5 hours. Some of that, like from White Pass back to Cascade Locks, 4 hours or something like that.
Yeah. And you're not smelling your best at that time.
No. And then what if they don't show up? Then what are you going to do? Like, you don't know them. Like, how do you know how reliable they are? People say that stuff. Yeah, I'll come get you. But like, are they really going to come get you? Like what recourse do you have? Like,
right. Yeah. If Cousin Charlie backs out on you, I mean, you know where to find Cousin Charlie later on and give him hell. Yeah. But this person, you don't know from Adam.
Yeah, exactly, man. So you're just hoping they show up, but there's a backup plan. My backup plan, I had to walk all the way back to my car. It's going to take another week, you know, or what else are you going to do? I don't know. Like, I don't know. There's, so on that subject of just complications and stuff, and the further from home you get, the more it's that, you know, when you get to the, like when I do the California desert, I can drive there, but it doesn't make a ton of sense. So I don't have a car down there. So I get to like San Diego. I'm about to do this again. Someone has got to get me out to the terminus, you know, to the trailhead. And when you're doing sections, when you're done, someone's got to come get you, take you to another airport and stuff. So the further you are from home, just the harder all that stuff becomes.
Yeah. And Mrs. Magnet, she's busy running marathons. I mean, so she. She
oh, yeah. And she has a job, man. She's
sure.
A lot,
yeah.
A lot more important job than me. I don't know. And how do you ask someone? Like, yeah, take a week off, because it'd be 2 days to drive down there, 2 days to drive back. Can't do it.
Right. So where did you start your section hike of the PCT? And when did you start?
Yeah. So I was initially, because I'm extreme Oregon and that was my thing. Oregon's my thing. Mm-hmm. I was just going to do Oregon. So now I was going to be good with that. And then, so we started at the California Oregon border at Donnamore Pass. And then that's where we started. So, and then we were going to do, I think like a 90 mile section or something. And it ended up being shorter because there was a Trail Angel at, not Fish Lake, the one right before that. There's another lake right there. Anyway, there's a something resort. Anyway, she's like, yeah, don't take your dogs on this lava section in Brown Mountain. I'm like, still, it'll tear up their paws like really, really bad. So we had our dogs like, all right. So then we called it and I went back and did it later, but that was a first.
Okay. And then that morphed into not just doing Oregon, but you set a goal to do the entire PCT.
Yeah, man. So as this went for me, I like the more I got immersed in the trail culture, the more I wanted more of it. Like when we first went out there, like I said, we were super like heavy and I didn't even know. There was backpacking and then there was ultralight backpacking. I didn't know. I just thought it's backpacking gear. This is what is out there. And then we started seeing people and seeing their gear. I'm like, what the heck? Like that dude's tent looks like a tarp. And it was Dyneema, but it's like, I thought it was like some piece of crap tent. But then when you talk to them, like, oh shoot, it's like super expensive actually. And it's super light. And so when we did that first section, we met some thru hikers. And then we ended up, my wife's like, hey, when you guys come through Bend, give us a call. You can stay at our house. And so after we did our first section, we got to also be, trail angels, I guess, or to hikers. And so they stayed with us. And then I got to quiz them on all their gear. Like, they don't have pumps. They don't have water pumps. What's this? And they squeeze through the filters with these little, like, ultralight bladders. They're like, never knew. I was still hiking in boots, and they were hiking a trail runner. That's brilliant. It's brilliant. And like looking at their tents and how light their packs are, I'm like, this is unbelievable, man. So I gathered all the information from these people like that I could. And so the next time I'm out, I'm like half the weight, you know, that I was. And now I got trail runners. It's like immediately I went from 14 mile a day was hard on that first section, like hard. where people would talk to me after I was done, and I could barely converse. Like, I don't want to talk, man. Like, I am just like over everything right now. And then I went from like, when we went back out there, ultra light, we were doing 20s easy. Both my wife and I, like, and not even barely tired, a little tired, but like nothing like we were.
Mm-hmm.
So that. And then we received our first trail magic when we were out there. And then, you know, meeting trail angels and seeing all like the support that you get in the community that people build and the friendships that they build. It's like, man, this is the best thing ever. Like, who wouldn't want to be a part of this? Like, or want to like immerse yourself deeper. Like, you know, I don't know. These people, they live like animals, but they're like, they got this own little world going on out here. It's like, with all the resources and all the support, like, I don't get this kind of support in my regular life. And I like help people for a living, but no one comes and like brings me sodas and lunch ever, you know, ever. And so, but out here almost every day, man, like we had a pretty good run of like trail magic, and it's like, it's not always like that, but it was on that run. I'm like, dude, we get like, we're treated like a little bit like celebrities. You get to make friends. You have this epic adventure. I have no responsibilities other than what I'm doing. It's the coolest thing.
Yeah. And Magnus, if someone, let's be honest, if someone came up to you at your work and brought you a soda and some food, and you had no idea who this person was, you'd be kind of looking at them sideways a little, like, what's going on here?
Yeah, I would, man. But you don't think twice on the trail, but it's like, I don't
know. Right.
It's a weird concept that you get all the support doing something that's like pretty, it's hedonistic 100%. It's all for you, but these people are supporting you. And like, but then you go back to the real world, I really don't get any support, but it's like, I'm actually doing something. I'm actually helping people here though. Like, I'm giving up myself and I get nothing. And I think that's just, you could say that's true in healthcare, which it is, but it's true with teachers. It's true with all kinds of different service workers and stuff.
Yeah. It's crazy. It should be flip-flopped, right?
Yeah. That's what I keep thinking, man. I'm like, you know, I don't know. I feel almost guilty taking trail matches. Like, I'm out here, like, I drop out of society, man. Like, you go find someone that's like working on a cure for cancer. And bring them lunch, you know.
Go give them that donut. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Veterans, police, first responders, like, go right. Find someone that's I'm basically a dropout. So just, you know, I don't feel like I deserve it. I appreciate it a lot, but like, I feel guilty at the same time.
Sure. Now, how much of the PCT have you finished through section hiking?
Almost exactly half to the mile. So the whole desert section in one run. Which there's a term for that, which I didn't know at the time, but you heard of a lash, long ass section hiker. It's called lash.
Okay.
I just found that out.
Nice lash.
I have a lash. And then I'd done all of Oregon and then the first third of Washington to White Pass.
Okay. And then what changed your mind? What made you go from section hiker to taking on the entire PCT all at once in 2.5 weeks? What changed in your life that allowed you to do that?
So I was going to continue sectioning this year. I was all in. I had a guy at work that was going to cover me while I was out. So I was going to at least do the Sierra and some more sections in Washington and stuff. So it's kind of same as what I did last year. And then he's in the Army Reserve and he got deployed. So he's out. So I have no coverage. So I was telling my boss, like, and they were kind of like, well, you know, you can't be having you out this year when he's not, and he's out. So, you know, and you're pretty much not going to be able to, you know, hike much was what I got. So I'm like, oh man, I have to swallow this, you know, not gonna be able to hike much. And so I decided that maybe I need to just cut ties and like, you know, let them go a different route. Let me go a different route. Maybe I need to do this. I can't just not hike. So like, I'm gonna quit this job, man. But then I'm like, well, if I'm going to quit the job, well, shoot, man, like I gotta go all in. Like, this is a golden opportunity. I'm not going to be able to quit a job every year. So it's like, if I'm quitting, well, that's different. I'm free. Like I got to take advantage. I'm going to do the whole thing. So that's how it came.
Magnet, that story took a turn for me. I was not expecting that. I was expecting you to say, you know, my employer, you know, heard about my passion for hiking and said, hey, you know what? This is important to you. You need to do this, and gave you some kind of like sabbatical for 4 or 5 months to get this done. And it went the other direction.
He said that when I had the guy that was going to cover me, he said that. And it was cool to hear him say that. Actually, he's really supportive, but the logistics changed dramatically when there's like no one to cover me, man. It's not the kind of job where it's like, yeah, you can just walk away from them. So it's like, I kind of maybe knew this was coming. But you just can't keep doing this every year, being gone for these massive chunks of time and have it, you know, it's kind of unfair a little bit for me to keep doing that to people. So it's like, yeah, I'm just gonna bail and see what happens. So I don't know what I'm gonna do when I come back.
You'll figure it out. It'll all work out. Now, what happens if you have the time of your life on the PCT and you finish up at the Canadian border and you say to yourself, self, I want to be a triple crowner. I want to do the AT and the CDT. Is that a possibility, or is this your one shot?
No, it's a definitely possibility, man. I'm kind of reserving. I don't know how I feel when I'm done. Never done this kind of miles, like not right. even close in one second. So I don't know how I'm going to feel. Mm-hmm. I may be like, I never want to hike again. Or I could be, all right, that was great. Now I'm even more addicted to it. So now I'm going to do the next one. So I don't know. But definitely I'm already sort of like thinking of the next trail. And I've kind of got my eye on the Continental Divide Trail, but I don't want to, wouldn't you say that's kind of getting ahead of myself? Like I haven't, let me do this one.
One thing at a time.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. All right. Well, hey, you have to promise that when you come through the Acton Agua Dulce area on the PCT, it's about 450 miles into the PCT.
I know.
Send me a message and we'll do some trail angeling.
Hey, awesome. Yeah, I know. Cause I've already went to the KOA there.
There you go. Yeah.
I took a Uber to some kind of Mexican restaurant on the highway there, like right off the highway by the gas station. Okay. It was really good, but I don't remember the name. And I went into a liquor store next to the Mexican restaurant, and apparently they thought I was a homeless person, which I guess we get that a lot. But like a guy comes up to me in the parking lot after I went in there to get a beer. And he's like, you're doing the PCT, huh? And I was like, yeah. He's like, oh yeah. I was telling the guy in the store, that's what I thought you were doing. He thought you were a homeless man. And so I told him, no, I think you're doing the PCT. And I just wanted to confirm. I'm like, yeah. I start to wonder, like, how many other people think that, man? Like, you stink. And all the symptoms, man. Except high-end homeless a little bit. Because, you know, how many homeless guys got the Garmin, the GPS on that and the communicator? Not that many, but.
That's right. Or the tent that looks like junk, but it's actually a $600 tent.
Yeah, but they don't entirely see what you got in the pack. It's like. And you just fit the part otherwise, you know?
Right. Now, what are you expecting from this trip? What are your expectations?
Man, a lot of good photos, a lot of beautiful scenes, definitely some new friends, like, you know, new people, new friends for life. I expect to lose like 30 pounds. Not that I really want to, but I know that's going to happen. And I honestly think that it's going to, yeah, I if I'm leaning one way or the other, I think it's going to be like something that just catapults me even more into this, you know. But I don't want to like start saying, oh, then next I'm going to do this. Then I haven't even done, I'm still a section hiker. I'm still nobody. So
you're a lash.
I'm a lash. I have, you know, it's kind of interesting. People on the trail, I would tell people I'm a section hiker. You know, you get like a certain amount of attitude about that from some people, through hikers. But it's interesting because they're not through hikers yet, though. It's like, we've all walked the same distance. Like, so in the desert, we all started at the same place. We've all done the same thing, but they get to like tease me because they're through hiking. I'm section hiking, but it's like,
well, it's not a through hike until they finish.
Yeah. My friend that I was hiking, the little section I met on the, everybody's section hiker until you kiss the Northern Terminus. So it's something to remember. It's like you can get the ego and think you're something special, right? But it's like we're all section hikers, man. Like we've all, you know, until you're done, you're not a through hiker. So that's an interesting way of looking at it, huh?
It is, absolutely. That's a great quote. Everyone's a section hiker until you kiss the Northern Terminus.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. And what does Mrs. Magnet think of this expedition?
I just think she supports me, probably not the expedition. Like she wants me to be happy, and she knows I've been talking about this and into this trail for a while. But there's 100% no way she's happy I'm doing it. And I don't blame her, you know, and that's part of the, when you asked me at the beginning, like, are you just, you know, butterflies about this hike? It's like, yeah, in a way, but I also know the reality. It's like, there's a certain amount of guilt. Like, I'm a husband, supposed to be anyway. who's going to do this, who's going to do that, like all the nights you'd be by yourself and like not have anyone to go out to dinner with, that stuff's real, man. Like it's, sure. So there's no way she's excited. Well, that's good, right? I'm glad she's not excited about it.
If she was excited, that might be a warning sign.
100%, it'd be a warning sign. Yeah. So there's guilt with leaving my dogs. Like, you know, I don't have kids, but like, there's still like just things I'm responsible for. And there's certainly, so it's mixed emotions. Like I, on a personal level, I'm pumped to get out there. I'm so excited, man. But there's that reality that sort of hangs over a lot of us, you know.
Is she going to meet you out there at all? Certain sections?
Maybe. I asked her to. I know until I get to Oregon, she won't. I don't think she's going to drive like all the way down into California. But I hope she will. And I'm really hoping to pick up my dog, Lupin, when I get back to Oregon. That's my plan. She was like, maybe that's too much for him. So there's still some back and forth on that, whether I'm going to be allowed to, I guess. But I want to pick up my dog, too, because I'm going to be missing him so bad. And you know, he can do it. I know he can do it.
Well, here's another pro tip for you, Magnet. Make sure you hug Mrs. Magnet before you hug Lupin.
Yeah, good. Thank you, man.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember that. Yeah.
The pro tip insight of the week.
Hey, Magnet, you know where we are right now?
No.
We're at that time of the episode where I ask you for your pro tip insight of the week. So what bit of trail wisdom can you share with our listeners to make their next outdoor experience even better?
Man. Oh, are we talking any kind of outdoor experience or like through hike, long section hike?
You get to define this, any kind.
Okay, man. That's a good question. I think, you know, we talked about the weight of our pack and stuff like that. I think, you know, dialing in your gear is a super big, like, the thing that really helped me a lot, not just with the weight, but like being comfortable out there, like will make or break a trip. And especially when you're new or say trying to introduce like your significant other to the outdoors, to the backpacking, better make sure they're comfortable. And I made that mistake, man. Not getting a sleeping bag for someone that was rated cold enough for what we experienced. And that's like the number one way to just ruin it. So I never want to go again. Yeah, just getting the right gear, getting help if you need help from the hiking community or REI or whatever. Getting the right gear so that you're comfortable, just you eat good, that you can stay warm and not get blisters and sores and stuff like that is the number one thing that I think will make you keep going out.
Fantastic. Yeah, if you don't have the right gear out there and you're miserable, it's hard to enjoy the experience. Yeah.
I have a friend, man, I took backpacking for his first trip and he never... I can't get him to go ever again. And I even asked him, man, did I ruin it for you? And he's like, no. But he's never gone since. And I did ruin it for him, man. We did like an off trail thing in Eastern Oregon, like in these canyon lands. And I was having the time of my life, but I tell you, like you know, in the movies, like when the guy's walking across the desert and he's like staggering, like he's going to fall over. He looked like that towards the end, man. Like he was about to collapse. And I was like, oh shoot. And I was telling other people that, and they're like, man, I can't believe you took them there. Like, you should have taken them on like some slam dunk little pretty little hike in the trees. And I'm like, I know, man. I just really wanted to go to this one place, and I didn't think it through. And I didn't realize how out of shape he was. Hope he's not listening. And I didn't realize his gear was so bad too, man. Like, he had a sun hat, but it was like for the rain, so it didn't breathe at all. It was like Gore-Tex, and so he's just dying. So kind of my bad. On that.
So it's like taking a new skier up to a double black diamond run right off the bat.
Yeah. Yeah. They'll never want to go again. Don't even ask.
All right. So there you have it. That's it. This episode is just about in the books. Hope our listeners enjoyed our time with Magnet. I want to thank him for joining us this week. Magnet, we mentioned it earlier, but how can our listeners keep up with you on social media and where can they find updates on your PCT hike?
So I'll be doing like updates whenever I have reception on Instagram at that magnet.northbound page. I'm going to try to vlog and I won't have my computer and things. So I'm hoping I can pull that off just logistically with my phone. And I have a Pocket 2 DJI gimbal. So I'm going to try to like vlog, and that'll be on YouTube at Magnet Northbound, same name. And then there's that Extreme Oregon page that's on Instagram and Facebook, but I won't, since it's not Oregon, I can't, you know, it's until I walk to Oregon, then I can start posting on there. But like, but the most up-to-date stuff will be the Magnet Northbound Instagram and YouTube page.
I like the way you phrase that. I just have to walk to Oregon, then I can post on that page.
Yeah. Once I cross the border, I'll be like, hey, I'm back. I can, yeah, that's what people, I remember when I was doing the desert, people were saying, hey, you're walking home. I'm like, yeah, I thought about it like that. I am walking home. Yeah.
Nice. Now remember to check out the pod on social media as well. We are on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. Magnet, you got a TikTok?
No, man. How old do you think I am? Like, no. I don't think I'm going there.
I told Ginger Balls I had a TikTok, and he called me a teenage girl. So there you go.
Yeah, it seems like that's the demographic. I don't see how that relates to my landscape floors. No, man, I'm good. Yeah.
Okay. And if you have comments or clips you want to share, you can send it to me at johnfreakingmuir@gmail.com.
The Adventure Media Recommendation.
Magnet, I'm also looking to you to share a recommendation for a book, a movie, documentary, some kind of adventure media to keep our listeners connected to the outdoor experience. We're calling this our Adventure Media Recommendation. What do you have for us?
Yeah, man. There is a guy, I don't read, like when I read something, it's like guidebooks, and I'm trying to learn, you know, to get better about whether it's photography or backpacking. So I don't guess I'm gonna read a lot, but there's a YouTube guy, and he actually kind of got me really wanting to get more into videography when I'm on the trail and stuff. His name's Calvin Weibel. I don't think he has like a ton of followers. I just love this guy's style. And I don't know him personally. It's not a plug of, you know, a friend of mine or anything like that. But I saw him. I think I met him when he was actually on the trail in 2019. So he did a documentary of his through hike. I love his style that he kind of portrays, or the mood he portrays, even though it's not 100% real. It's so much better to me than so many of the documentaries that are like so happy. Everyone's so happy and smiley and all, and you're like, well, you know, I know it's not like that. That's, you know, there's one I watched and like the person was like skipping down the trail. You're like, oh, that's not real. And this dude goes the other way. Like he never even like really smiles when he talks or laughs or anything. He's like, it's kind of dramatic, but it's like, it almost makes the trail feel like more wild and more remote and like more foreboding than it is. So his is, I mean, none of them are like entirely authentic, I guess, but I prefer his take on it, I guess. And so I would recommend people watch that. It's called Northbound. This is his documentary that he did. So.
Okay. And it's Calvin Weibel. How do you spell the last name?
W E I B E L.
Okay. All right. Have you discovered IBTAT?
No.
Yes, check out his YouTube channel. I think you would like it a lot. IBTAT. It's IBTAT.
Okay. I'll ask you that later.
I'll get you the info. He's right up your alley. He's been on the podcast a couple of times, and he is just a hell of a guy. He tells it like it is out there on the trail. So
yeah, I admire that, man. I really do.
Yeah. All right.
What have we not asked you?
And before we wrap things up, I've got just one more segment for you called What Have I Not Asked You That You're Dying to Tell Us About?
You know, we sort of touched on this and I thought maybe we would, but there's something I wanted to like bring up if it didn't already come up. And it's about the hike your own hike mentality. And I don't know if your listeners, some of them may or may not know what that is, but there's a through hiking mentality or mantra, I guess it is, and sort of all same thing as like, you know, leave no trace. Something that like our community sort of faces and or says that they embrace, but it's the philosophy that there's no one way to hike a trail. There's no one way to do a long trail. You can section hike, you can weekend hike, you can flip flop, you can do it northbound, you can do it southbound, but there's no one reason that, you know, you're out there. That we all have our own things that we're seeking and our own reasons for being out there and things we're looking to accomplish out there. But we all still support each other and we all still, you know, are here for each other and we're all still welcoming to each other. And that's what we say, right?
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I've noticed, and as being a lowly ham and egger all the way to, you know, section hiker and then hopefully a through hiker, it's like I've been all the phases. So, well, I'm about to be the last phase, hopefully, but like I get I've received, you know, received the mentality and kind of wrote it up. And so it's like, we don't live up to that ideal. Like 50% of us do and 50% of us don't. And I think it's something that we could like work on. And I'm talking to myself too. So I never want to like lose touch with like where I came from, but I think we could do better as far as, you know, treating everybody, no matter why they're out there or for how long they're out there or their gear or how fit they are or any other reason you could judge someone. I think there's room for improvement there. Like we should all, a lot of us could be better and more welcoming, and saying there's even amongst thru hikers, they argue that you have to do a continuous footpath or you, it's okay if you skip closures, but some people are like, no, that's not a thru hike. And there's a lot of ego out there. I guess that's where that comes from. Right.
Yeah.
My way. And people will say, hike your own hike in a way that's like derogatory. If you're not careful, you're insulting someone pretty easily. Cause I've had that directed at me. It's like, hey, you know, I mean, you know, but hike your own hike, but like, basically that's stupid what you're doing, or that's not, why would any, you know, some insult, but you know, hike your own hike.
Yeah. Right.
Okay, man, I was going to hike my own hike anyway. I didn't really need you to tell me that. And, you know, hike yours too, I guess. Like, what? I don't know. It's like, don't say it if you don't mean it. By all means, say it, but mean it. Like, understand that other people have, like, different motives, a different life, like, different requirements. And it's like, I think thru hikers should remember that section hikers are, like, basically people that usually still have jobs and are still doing something in society. Well, the thru hikers are basically dropped out of society. So there's a reason that there's a reason that they're section hikers or weekenders or whatever. They're mm-hmm. doing stuff in life.
Right.
We have the privilege of not, and that's great, but we shouldn't be looking down on anybody that like, hey man, they probably got a lot more going on than we do. So like, should respect them. I don't know. That's just me, but.
That's a great point. And so after you kiss the Northern Terminus, you're not going to look down your nose at people who haven't done that yet then.
No, man. And I, like I said, I'm partially telling this to myself so I don't lose touch with it, you know, start thinking that I'm something special. I don't want to be that. I said the only time though, and the reason I say it to myself is because I've, even as a section hiker, I've looked down on some of the weekenders, not looked down on them, but been mad at them a few times. It's like when I walk,
you know, 25 miles. Because they smell so nice.
Well, and they get the best spots because I had to walk all day. I didn't show up till 6 o'clock, right?
Right, right.
They got there like 2. They sprawled out all their stuff. They got the grill going. And it's like, I roll in, there's no spots left, and they just stare at you like, I'm not coming here, you know? And like, I'll get pissed a little bit. It's like, dude, I walked 25 miles, man. Like, really? You're going to treat me like this? Like, you just rolled in, either car camped or you just came in on a side trail. And like, I'll get a little pissed sometimes, but so I'm not immune to it either. So, but once I gather myself and get some sleep, it's like, all right, it's all good. But like, the bigger picture is like, I don't want to be that person. I don't like that about myself I'm telling it to myself as well. Like, I guess stay humble. Don't be that person. That's like, gets that all right. That elitist with people. Right. I wouldn't like that about myself. So I ask that of other people a little bit too. It's like, let's all be that. Let's live up to that ideal. Let's be these welcoming, fair and non-judgmental people that we say that we are, right?
That's the ideal to strive towards. Nice. Yeah. Now you leave what, first week in March?
Yeah. So probably I'm flying out on the 14th. So mid-March.
Mid-March. And yeah. How long do you expect to be out there? What's your goal?
Well, okay. I'm going to probably go slower if I'm having a good time, if I'll be honest with you. Like I might want to extend, you know, make it last as long as possible if I'm having a good time. So I would say like September 1st, early September, like to be done.
Okay.
If I'm hating it, I'm going to do 30s and get done by like earlier.
Okay. So like five and a half months then.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, we wish you the best of luck. And again, don't forget to reach out. We'll do some trail magic out there in Acton, Agua Dulce. Get you some good grub.
Oh, that's awesome. All right. Thank you, Doc.
You got it.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's a wrap from the John Freaky Muir studio. Any shout outs to friends and family, Magnet?
Oh man, that's a good one. Well, my wife, Lisa, my dogs, Lupin and Piper, and to all the PCT class of 2021 that I met when I was sectioning and got a chance to do trail magic for and host at my house. congratulations to those that finished, and I hope to be one of you.
Okay. Well, thank you for tuning in. Always remember, the trail is the trail. It doesn't care if you want to go downhill. It doesn't care if it's almost dark and you're looking for a campsite. It doesn't even care if the store clerk thought you were homeless. The trail is the trail. Embrace the suck.